This is Mythical.
We're so excited to introduce you to Great Jones. Great Jones makes high-quality, thoughtfully designed cookware that's so stunning you won't want to put it away. From Dutch ovens to ceramic dishes to non-stick sheet pans, they've got you covered.
Heck yeah, they do. Their products come in a variety of amazing colors, from classic black and white to pinks, greens, yellows, and blues. And the best part, Nicole, everything's non-toxic.
Josh, I've been in the market for a kettle for months.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about it a weird amount.
Yeah, I've bought like a bunch, returned a bunch, but I just got my hands on the Great Jones Fellow Kettle collab, and I got it in the color broccoli, and I'm so excited to make artisanal teas and coffees. I'm trying to get on my coffee game right now, and I'm so excited to use a gooseneck kettle. We have no idea.
I'm excited to use their yellow hot dish, aka casserole dish. Shout out to Minnesota and Fargo, North Dakota. I'm at that point in my life where I'm like, I'm an adult, I should have nice vessels to serve food out of.
Sure, fair.
Instead of just serving it on like stainless steel restaurant style things. And I like it. It's cute. It's got a good design. Bakes really well. Holds heat. I'm in, baby. And once you try Great Jones, you'll want to share it with friends. They make stunning gifts that are actually useful. Weddings, housewarming parties, birthdays, it's the perfect gift for the foodie in your life.
So upgrade your kitchen and replace those old, rusted hand-me-downs with bold, beautiful, long-lasting pieces from Great Jones. Get started today at greatjones.com and get an extra 15% off your first order with promo code SANDWICH. That's greatjones.com, promo code SANDWICH.
Cooking techniques get passed down from generation to generation. But with new technologies and innovations, does that wisdom become improved or does it disappear? Did the advent of the internet and access to millions of recipes make you a better cook than your grandma? Today we ask the question, which generation is the best at cooking? This is A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What?
Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show where we break down the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherer.
And I'm your host, Nicole Hendizadeh.
And today we are answering the question, which generation is the best at cooking? Nicole, what do you think? Are you going to sell out your current generation and go with someone else? Don't be a sellout.
How about we say it on three together?
Yeah.
One, two, three. Boomers.
Middle millennials. No, no,
what?
Middle millennials.
What
ones who were born between like 1990 and 1994.
So you.
So me. Well, yeah, and like my general peers.
Oh my gosh, no. Boomers.
What do you mean boomers?
Okay, so baby boomers, which let me
don't
just
cape for the boomers today. Don't be the generation traitor.
The baby boomers are apparently 51 to 69 years old. Nice.
Nice.
And yeah, the best food I've ever had was prepared by an older person. I'm sorry. Nobody cooks the way an older person cooks. Cooking comes with experience. Cooking comes with patience. Cooking comes with wisdom. All of those things create a better chef.
Disagree. Cooking does not come from age, wisdom, or experience. Cooking comes from radical new ideas and willingness to experiment and access to information. And that is how if...
But that's not age dependent. But being radical and stuff, that's not age dependent. You could still be radical and try new things when you're old.
That's true. There is a chance here that we veer into ageist territory, and we certainly will not try and do that. But if we were to say, look at the demographics of, say, you know, the big cooking blogs today, because I'm thinking about all the access of information that I had versus my dad was a baby boomer. I act like I'm admitting something. Like, my father was a boomer, Nicole.
He's old.
He's old. He was like literally born in 1946, like during the baby boom.
Yeah.
And growing up, when we wanted to make a recipe at home, as opposed to, you know, consulting Google, he wasn't the greatest with computers and whatnot. Like, he didn't know how to use a GPS or especially a smartphone. And so he would have me go on MapQuest.com and,
print out
physical maps.
Oh, my God. We have the same life in so many ways. To this day, my dad still goes, Bubba, can you MapQuest this for me? Dad, MapQuest has been out of business for like 7 years.
Wait, does MapQuest still exist or
it's
just gone?
I don't use MapQuest. I use Waze like a millennial. Like the millennial I am. No, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm happy we have that same memory.
Yeah, the shared life experience.
That's really funny.
Occasionally, I'll go back and ask Jeeves an actual question. I think Jeeves is still there. That was before, like, you know, Google was dominating everything. I remember when I was a child, I would literally ask Jeeves and I'd be like, hey, Jeeves, can I get the answer? And I would just type a full out question, not understanding that it was just, you know, a thing that would search keywords through an algorithm.
When's
and
the
find
last
things.
Time you did that?
Like 2 weeks ago, I was like, Jeeves, what is love? And he
it's
just said,
it's just ask.com.
He just said,
that.
Baby, don't hurt me.
No, you know that it's just ask.com now.
Anyways, what I was saying, my dad, when we wanted to make a recipe growing up, You know, he wouldn't go consult the internet, and like we had like DSL at that point, you know, and so he would go to a 1944 church cookbook that had like been passed down through his family. It was like one of the few family mementos that we had. No one from our family wrote it or even like went to church. It was just a random old cookbook that we had. But all of the recipes were just like stewed prunes with rabbit, and it was like, do you have a garden filled with rabbits? Kill a rabbit, melt down a brick of lard, throw some prunes in there, and you got a dish. And he was just like, yeah, this is what we ate growing up. And he was like, you know, not from like the rural South or anything. It was just, you know, from Allentown, Pennsylvania. And I don't know if people know this. There was a huge push for people to keep backyard rabbits during World War II.
I didn't know that.
It was this huge, like, very awesome kind of American wartime propaganda thing called Victory Rabbits.
Interesting.
Well, they were called Victory Gardens, where they were basically like, yo, if stuff really hits the fan and the war comes to the U.S., our food supply lines are going to get disrupted. So, like, housewives staying at home, your husbands are off fighting the Nazis. You need to be growing a garden to be able to learn how to subsistence farm. Also, in that garden, you should have rabbits because they're a very low-touch animal to keep and eat, and they breed a lot. You can fatten them up really well. And so, like, you know, my dad would just grow up eating rabbits that had been, he said he would, like, pull buckshot out of the rabbit meat and eat it. And so what I'm saying, you know, you go from that to then my millennial sensibilities of cooking.
Mountain Dew cheesecakes.
No, but not that. But I mean, access to, you know, different cultures and cuisines. Like, you know, in thinking about my dad's era, you know, his mom never would have thought to cook, you know, Filipino adobo or Korean mul nemyong or anything. And I think now that we are in this information age, there's just a massive potential to explore the world's cuisines from your own kitchen. And again, I understand that even talking about this discussion, like we're looking at it through our respective culinarily, you know, our respective biases and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So like, obviously, you know, if you're from an immigrant community, you know, you eat vastly different foods, and those change differently throughout generations. You know, I got some Jewishism on one side, so I grew up, you know, eating some brisket and some smoked salmon every once in a while. But my view of baby boomer cooking through my own personal bias lens is just like mayonnaise and like Spam.
You're going to end on Spam?
I'm going to end on Spam.
You end on Spam. So I think that baby boomers are much better cooks because it's pure, it's simple, it's delicious. I think millennials are just screwing it all up.
Whoa, what do you mean?
We're just going in there and we're taking, you know, foods from like, I don't know, rural Michigan, and then we're throwing in, let's put some, you know, from Laotian food in there. And it's just like, what are you doing? I don't think millennials have the same respect for food the way that baby boomers do. I think they just want to go in there and, you know, they're like, I saw this on a blog, no reputable sources. They're just like, I saw this crazy thing on the internet, I'm going to try to make it. And then they don't know that it's a fake video where someone literally takes a caramel and heats it up. It's so funny. Have you seen these like 5-minute crafts videos where they take like 25 ways to make caramel fun? And it's like really unsafe methods of like cooking, of like taking a Werther's caramel and heating it up on a pan. And then in the next shot, it's like beautifully like melted caramel sauce, which is not how you do it.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much faking and movie magic goes into
there's
that.
There's so much misinformation going on for millennial cooks that it's actually dangerous. The one thing I can say is that the boomers, the things that they were given, those church cookbooks from 1944, that kind of information stays because it's been tried and true and tested. Millennials don't have that much access to concrete, strong, true, tried and tested recipes the way that our mommies and daddies did.
That is a really interesting point. It's like we're so spoiled for information.
Much information.
I mean, that's such a metaphor for just like the current time we're living in. It's like you would think people would be so educated about all these current events and everything, but there's literally just too much information to choose from that we can't even decide. God, I guess I feel that when I cook all the time too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm literally like living in Los Angeles. We have access to every type of food imaginable. There are people from every single country in the world represented in Los Angeles. If you want to go find Trinidadian groceries, you can easily find Trinidadian groceries.
Yep.
Got to go down to South LA. There's actually a really good Trini grocery store down there.
I'm sure.
But anyways, like now when I'm, you know, what do I make for dinner every night? And I know I have all this wealth of knowledge and culture and food at my disposal. I'm just like, I'm just going to boil rice and mix it with yogurt and meat. You know, so I do feel that.
And, yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, like a lot of the content that's being created on the internet, on all these blogs and stuff, they're not vetted. It's not from experts. And like, how many times have you tried to follow a recipe from one of these kind of new foodie blogs? I mean, crap, I wrote a blog for a long time that like my recipes weren't like properly tested. I would, sure, you know, measure some stuff and I'd kind of eyeball it and then write a recipe and then people would try and go out and make it. And sometimes they straight up just be like, yo, this don't work. And then I'd go into the recipe and realize, like, oh, I just forgot, you know.
An egg,
or anything.
Baking soda.
It's really anything.
Yeah.
Whereas at least, you know, when we're talking about these, I guess church cookbooks are a different thing because those are just kind of cobbled together. But I'm thinking about when there was more, like, hierarchy in food media and stuff that was published.
Yeah.
You know, like MFK Fisher, you know, writings, like,
sure,
beautiful cookbooks back in the day. Like, that stuff was rigorously tested because they had the kind of resources to do that. That said, it's less democratic because now you can have anyone sort of creating these resources online. So it's like, which one would you rather have?
That's something that's really interesting because a lot of the times it's like you get inundated with so many different things and so many different options. It's like is it Sylvia Plath, the bell jar?
When yeah,
she talks about the figs and then she tries to reach for the figs and then she's like, I don't know which fig I want. And then all the figs are on the floor and they're rotten. That's how I feel with cooking content
right now.
Yeah, I freaking love that quote, man.
I love the quote in the bell jar where the dude's eating salad with his hands.
Yeah.
And I was like, I do that. I eat salad with my hands. I think the guy was probably a metaphor for male privilege. But, you know, instead of seeing the metaphor, I was just like, salad hands. I like that.
No one was looking at him funny either, huh?
No one was looking.
Everyone was just eating salad with his hands. He ate it with such confidence
that he was just eating salad with his hands.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Do you think that Gen Z has any hope in the cooking world?
Who?
Gen Z.
Who's that?
Trevor.
Oh, Trevor? No, Trevor can't cook.
Like on TikTok, like you see these youths, like they're like 15 years old. They have massive followers. They have like 3 million people watching their videos and liking their videos of them making, I don't know, Hainanese chicken and rice. It's crazy.
Actually, yeah, dudes like, I'm thinking of like Niche Cooks,
yes.
Newt out there,
Eitan
Bernath.
Eitan,
we stan.
Eitan, come on the podcast. I know you're listening. We love you.
He's in Jersey. I thought he lived in LA. I was like, I think that's the Valley. And I was trying to see where he is.
Yeah, like these kids, I don't know, maybe Gen Z might be the new frontier because they are like combining the mistakes we make.
Yeah.
And
correct.
The accidents we make.
Correct.
And they're combining the knowledge of the boomers and creating like a new food sphere that like we don't even know about.
That's a really interesting point because the first generation that gets a new technology, right, they always like screw it up in a way.
I screwed
right?
up because
we're not me too. We're both responsible for so many food crimes against humanity. We made a hot dog cake. We made Flamin' Hot Pop-Tarts because we saw that like, wow, the internet universe is vast and infinite. We can do anything we want. We have all the power. And then we abused it currently abusing it for our full-time jobs.
Yes.
It's fun. I love to do it.
I have a good time.
I have a great time.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's like the atomic bomb, right? When it was first created, it was just like, how can we make
Oppenheimer.
This big? Yeah, Oppenheimer.
Wow.
Now I am become death destroyer of worlds.
Yes.
You know, so many people on the Manhattan Project were so like regretful of what they did. And then now, you know, we see the nuclear non-proliferation movement sort of happening where people are like, now that we have this technology, how do we use it ethically? That's how I feel about Gen Z and millennials in terms of food and internet.
Oh my gosh.
You know? Like they're like, look, you guys created like Laotian sushi burrito taco lasagnas. Maybe we can just use this vast wealth of knowledge to teach people how to cook real things. Cause even, dudes like Newt and Niche Cooks, they're just making like good, accessible meals and getting like millions upon millions of views.
It's awesome.
Yeah, like I think Newt made these like balsamic glazed chicken wings, and I was like, that is almost like a retro recipe.
I'm telling you, recipes, food is cyclical.
Food
comes
is so
back.
Cyclical.
It comes back. Jell-O. Do you know how popular Jell-O? I am in a Jell-O group. Did you know that on Facebook?
You're in a Jell-O group?
I am in a Jell-O appreciation group called Show Me Your Ass Picks. And it's my favorite. Stop.
Aspic as in like a savory
Jell-O. Aspic is a savory Jell-O.
Yeah.
And I love Jell-O. And I think it's just such a cool medium that's like from like what? Like moms in Utah in like 1930 or something.
There's a crazy story behind the creation of that like actual Jell-O. Yeah. I can't remember what it is. I think it had something to do with World
Mormons.
War II.
Mormons.
Oh, no, but Mormons do love Jell-O and Jell-O salads, yeah. But so do Filipino people.
Oh,
and I've really noticed that. I remember I was at a potluck with a Filipino friend, and she brought ambrosia salad, which is, I believe there's Jell-O in it, but it's some combination of like Cool Whip,
pineapple, and walnuts.
I believe marshmallows as well.
Okay,
little
cool. Yeah,
mini
yeah, yeah.
marshmallows.
Yeah.
But they're all these very like atomic age foods from the 1950s that to me, like I grew up eating that
they're
stuff.
Cool.
They're cool. And ambrosia to me is like really delicious.
Uh-huh.
It's just a lovely neon orange creamy slop.
Yeah.
But I associate that with like, you know, my just super old white family from Pennsylvania making it.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend was straight up like, I thought this was a Filipino original dish.
Wow.
Yeah, because if you think about, you know, holo-holo, there's a bunch of very colorful desserts.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And then she asked her parents and she was like, no, this is something that every Filipino just kind of like made when they emigrated to the U.S. They adopted it. They, you know, it was very slightly familiar, but they saw it as an assimilation food.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's funny how these kind of generational things through one lens signify something and through another lens of your lived experience signify another thing.
Totally. The one thing I will say, though, that the boomers don't have, that the Gen Zs and the Gen Ys have, is vegan options.
Yeah. That's another case why millennials rule.
Yeah, that's a point for you. I'm just going to give it to you at this point. I really do think that the vegan and vegetarian world, we are way past tofurkey at this point, you know?
Oh, yeah. That is a really funny way to look at this.
Yeah. The boomers didn't have much in terms of, you know, of vegan and vegetarian options. We had tofurkey. I'm a boomer. They had tofurkey, and that's about it.
Well,
but
like,
now,
tofu was a very kind of new, like, it was seen as a very new, weird, like, new age invention. Obviously, tofu has been around for thousands of years, making soy curds in China, and it's not used as just like a vegetarian meat substitute, of course. It's used as its own standalone dish to be served in meat dishes like
Absolutely.
Mapo tofu with ground pork. Absolutely delicious. But then during this kind of 1970s new age spiritual movement where a lot of these Eastern ideologies and diet practices and yoga and all that were kind of co-opted, there's this entire generation that hates tofu because their parents like tried to go vegetarian in the 1970s and made them eat a bunch of this just, you know, plain brick of white.
Yeah.
And so like they don't understand that it's, you know, this generational understanding of what something is. Even like Boca Burgers. If you look at the way that
Boca Burgers
have changed over the years.
Oh, geez.
I mean, think of like a Boca Burger, which is just this squishy, greasy sponge. Some of them have little vegan cheese cubes in them, which I think are great. Versus like the Impossible Burger. And like to see, you know, all that stuff on menus now at Burger King, at Carl's Jr. and all that. Like, you know, we haven't exactly tackled climate change in the best way, but, you know, we got Impossible Burgers at Burger King. That's something at least.
That's what I'm saying. I think I'm going to change my... Can I change?
Change it.
I'm no longer baby boomers. I'm going to go with Gen Z.
Wait, because... hold on. Can I change mine too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm no longer millennials. I'm Gen Z here. Because no...
I think we both... Okay, we both... Okay, because let me tell you.
Go ahead.
You said... Technology, you know, everyone screws up in the beginning when they first are given the technology. But I think the next generation, what's after Z?
I think we just start over. I don't know if we plan for any generation after Z. I think we're like, if we make it past Gen Z on Earth, we did a good job. We can stop naming the generations.
I'm going to call it Gen Zero.
Gen Zero is
because
good.
I'm sure the world is going to end.
Yeah,
and then they're going to sprout from the ground like, you know, alfalfas.
Definitely.
And I think Gen Zero has the most... Which doesn't exist right now.
You're putting all your future hopes on a potentially post-apocalyptic generation of
kids. Yes, because I
Hunter-gatherers.
Yes, oh my gosh. You know, actually so funny you say hunter-gatherers because when I was in like high school, I was like, ugh, I can't wait to go back to like a hunter-gatherer. This the world is too advanced. This is so silly.
We were too similar. Yeah, I'd be like, the bartering system just makes more sense. Like, I have a loaf of bread.
Yeah, I used to just be like, you know, we really need to go back to hunter-gatherer society. I was like, shut up, Nicole. You don't know what you're talking about. But I do feel like the next generation after Gen Z is going to be the best at cooking.
Do you feel like we put too many... of our hopes and dreams and failings on Gen Z to correct? Because I think we feel that as millennials.
Yeah, because baby boomers did that to us.
I know, that's what I'm saying. We're just repeating the cycle of generational abuse.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, you're just accepting it. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, they're going to be poaching eggs in sulfuric acid.
Save us, Trevor. Save us. What type of food did, like, your parents grow up eating? Or what type of food did they cook in the home? Like, would you say there's a generational difference?
Persian.
But, like, how has Persian food changed throughout the generations?
It hasn't.
That's
it doesn't.
Freaking cool, dude.
It doesn't.
It don't need to.
It's been the way it's been forever. The only thing I will say is that I follow a lot of food bloggers in Iran, which is really funny.
Yeah.
So I see them doing cool things like, you know, making these big sausage sandwiches with like a bunch of stuff in there, like, and like taking like tomatoes and like fresh like vegetables and like just smothering it in like some sort of like white sauce. I don't know what they're doing in Iran, but I love what they're doing because I've never had that.
Yeah.
But they're really inventive. They're like doing crazy things back in the homeland.
That's really interesting because I guess, you know, your whole kind of frame of reference around Persian food is probably stuff that, one, you get from restaurants, which are typically older owners, and then, two, what your parents are cooking. So they're kind of cooking a generation ago's Iranian dishes. And also what you think of that might be sort of fixed in your mind of what Persian food is. I mean, I'm just thinking about, like, macaroni tadig.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Remember when I made that?
Dude, that was really good.
That was really good.
I mean, that's made with boxed pasta, right?
Yeah.
And that didn't exist, I'm sure. That's,
I
like,
think
not
they
a...
had that. My parents had that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, for how long? Like, there must have been a point in Persian cookery where someone's like, this new generation making tadig out of macaroni?
You know, I don't... Well, you should know that the Shah of Iran was really down to be westernized. So, like, he was getting stuff from, like, France and Italy and, like, all over the world and being like, come, Iran, good. And then it just didn't happen.
Yeah, but there must have been, like, generational tension, like, with stuff like that, right?
I mean, there's still generational tension.
Yeah?
Me being a chef is generational tension.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, are you kidding me? All the time. You wanting to do something that's not doctor, not lawyer, not engineer is generational tension.
Yeah.
Wearing, clothes that are not exactly, you know, appropriate is generational.
You skateboarding all the time, that's generational tension.
I don't know how to skateboard.
You should, you know, you've seen like the famous like photos of like the women skateboarding in Iran in like the 70s?
No.
Oh, dude, it's really baller. It's cool. That's what I think of when I think of the generational tensions and whatnot.
I mean, I would love to learn how to skateboard, but about Persian food, like I think that if I came in and I was like, hey, I'm going to make, what's a Persian food, Josh?
Gorma sabzi.
If I made a gorma sabzi tostadas.
Sounds good to me.
It does.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, but you know, you got to be okay with getting some flack.
Yeah, but do you think a lot of that is trying to like, especially with Persians in the U.S., trying to like maintain this food culture that's so important?
I just think it's the concept, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Really?
With Persian food.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, because I mean, like, looking at all this through my family's lens, like, there was nothing to not be broke, right? They were, I mean, they were just making, you know, pies and eating rabbits stewed with prunes. And then every, like, new food invention that sort of came out, like, everyone likes to crap on these retro recipes all the time
that are
filled with Jell-O. Me neither. We're in the same boat on that.
I love them. I think it's such an interesting, like, way to look at the world and what 100%. They were doing. Like, have you seen the banana candle?
No.
Okay, Made in Japan made the banana candle, and that's all I'm going to say.
But, I mean, the crazy thing about that, there's so much, like, banana and pineapple in things that you wouldn't expect there to be. That stuff was, like, relatively new for a reason in America. It's because, you know, there was this increased sort of, you could call it, I mean, colonialistic development and stuff in, literally the term Banana Republic exists because I believe...
Trevor just taught me what that meant, Banana
really?
Republic. I'm like, huh, yeah, you mean the place with the collared shirts? He's like, no, Banana Republic is a term. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, but I mean, it literally comes from the fact that America had such crazy investments in, like, banana farms in, you know, Central America and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the annexation of Hawaii... Then they had the Dole Corporation trying to, like, sell pineapples in this idea of, like, a tropical paradise dream to mainland Americans. And so, you know, we like to look back on all these weird dishes that are, like, mix pineapples with mayonnaise and then put it in a donut. And everyone's like...
Again, that's just us. That's just, again, the people given new technology, new foods, screwing it up majorly. And then after the generations going, like, okay, now we can use pineapple and mayonnaise in this way.
Yeah.
So that's what, like, it all is.
Al pastor tacos.
I love al pastor tacos.
But yeah, like you said, we have these new technologies, like packaged mayonnaise was a really big thing back then that people were so excited about.
I'm still excited.
I love me some pre-packed. Everyone's like, the best mayonnaise is homemade. I'm like, nah, dude, best foods. It says it in the name. That's Hellman's? The best mayonnaise.
Hellman's
and best foods are the same, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I like mayonnaise.
I like mayonnaise too.
They called me mayonnaise girl in school. You know that? Because I was very good at making mayonnaise.
I love that. I love that for you. What was I going to say? I feel like I had something.
Sorry.
Oh, the same way that the boomers, like you could say, screwed up all these things using tropical fruits and pre-made mayonnaise and gelatin and all these things that were kind of, you know, very much pushed on them from huge marketing efforts. I think you could say the same way about millennials screwing up like fusion food really badly, you know, creating these monstrosities. I mean, I once made it was a sushi roll filled with pastrami and topped with poke, I believe.
Those words together in a sentence made me shiver. I don't know if you saw me shiver.
Oh, but this is the swinging early 2010s, you know, where that was all the rage. You know, Roy Choi's Korean tacos, you know, flooded the world. And everyone was like, well, if we just combine random words and then throw that out onto social media, it'll
throw
catch
them in a
like wild.
Wood.
Yeah, essentially. You do an Afghani Belgian fusion truck, stuff like that. That'd be pretty good.
What's that about?
There's this one dish.
I'd be down.
I feel like every culture has their like signature drunk food. And, you know, in LA, like I think about one, you know, street dogs, but also like carne asada fries.
Oh, hondo P. Yeah, yeah.
You think there's something called a halal snack pack in Australia?
Yeah. With the pizza box, just like fries and meat, fries and meat.
It's just fries kebab and just doused in, you know, whatever sauces.
I've seen a video of that being made in my mind. I was like, pow.
Oh, yeah.
It was so interesting.
But yeah, I think we've also abused, like, I don't think we can look at the boomers as like, well, they had gross bananas wrapped in ham covered in hollandaise, ergo they were bad cooks. I think you could look at so many, think about all the abominations that BuzzFeed Tasty has put out into the universe, right? Where they're like, cut a loaf of bread into weird strips and then stud it with raw ground beef and then put olives in there and then, okay, this actually sounds good. But
you're,
I
making
guess,
a picadillo loaf.
Yeah,
you're making
much.
A picadillo loaf.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, you could look back at all of these Tasty videos where they're like, you know, wrap a chicken breast in bacon and then shove that into the bottom of a bread loaf, then hollow that out and fill that with clam chowder. And you got your bacon, chicken, clam chowder surprise bomb.
Yeah.
Those are the same types of things that speak to that cultural moment, just like boomers are making with all these gross recipes. So for me, that's a wash.
We're going to look back. People are going to look back on our videos and just be like, what are you guys doing over there?
Yeah.
Is that Red Bull Gushers? You guys are crazy. They're going to be like, you did that? That's wild.
And it's going to take so long to try and to explain the historical context behind that. You'd be like, no, you see, like shock videos on the internet were popular during this era, but we tried to go sort of meta with that and then also pay homage to the sort of food science cooking of Alton Brown. But like Alton Brown, you know, on just a little bit of ADHD medication to try and speak to the Gen Zer. Like, it's so hard to explain all these things. Whereas for us, we just know it as this is the current moment.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Agreed.
So we're all looking at this with our own biases.
Sure.
But there are statistics, though.
I am excited for Gen Zero.
I am, too. But is Gen Zero actually going to cook? Well, if it's post-apocalyptic, they kind of got to.
They have to. But learn how to make a fire to sticks and lint.
What's the Einstein quote? I don't know what kinds of weapons World War III will be fought with, but I know World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones.
Okay, Gen Zero. I know you don't exist right now, but when you hear this, you heard it here first. You guys are going to be the best cooks.
How did we transition from, like, who's the best cooks to
Oppenheimer?
Oppenheimer and the apocalypse?
You know.
Yeah. One thing I will say is, I mean, millennials by the numbers do cook less than the generations before them. Mm-hmm. You know, we have more convenience foods out there and, like, people are busier and just working harder to try and afford life.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that Gen Z doesn't fall into that same category. I hope that we can somehow like provide a better future for Gen Z until we have the apocalypse and all that.
Yeah.
But can provide some sort of better future and, you know, they can actually take up the cooking mantle and become, you know, the generation that we have put all of our hopes and dreams and failures on.
Don't let us down.
Trevor, it's up to you, bud. It's up to you, buddy. You got this, Trevor. You're my boy. All right, Nicole, we've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling out there in the Twitterverse. It's time for a segment we call
Opinions on Like Casseroles!
What? Wow. We made a stylistic choice on that one. And I don't necessarily know if I like it.
I really enjoyed it.
That's great.
This was like free jazz. You've listened to free jazz? Don't listen to free jazz. It sucks.
No, but I want to watch Whiplash again.
I've never seen it.
Oh, my God. There is so much just emotion in that movie. But I think it's just because I grew up with a lot of weird relationships with sports coaches. Anyways, opinions are like casseroles. First up, we got at Katie Prather. Kombucha is nasty. I don't care what kind you have. It all smells and tastes horrible.
Okay, you're wrong. You know, it's a little vinegary. But, you know, you get through it because of the health benefits. I'm sorry, I cut over what you were going
to
say.
No. I was trying to wrap my head about this because you and I think we both take this personally because we drink a lot of kombucha.
I take it very personally.
Anytime any one of us goes to the store, we just know. We, like, know what kombucha flavors all of us like now.
Okay, you have to get something with a little bit of an herbal twist.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, God, you put, like, lavender melon?
Yeah.
GT's Great. Oh, you're a total guava goddess.
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are a guava goddess.
I am indeed. Trevor's like berry. Trevor loves berry. He's a triple berry man.
That said, yeah, kombucha is, like, really gross. If you really think about it, it's just vinegar. I love it. I love me a good, like, vinegary soda type thing. But the fact that, like, yeah, there's just occasionally going to be, like, a large gob of snot inside your vinegar soda. If that is, like, a thing that someone told me, I'd be like, look, I like it. Objectively, is a little bit disgusting.
Her name is Scobie, and you will respect her. Okay. Chris_Dilophosphorus says, spaghetti and meatballs is the worst pasta dish. It's too cumbersome. Cumbersome is a great word to describe spaghetti and meatballs.
Unwieldy, I'd say.
Yeah. It is probably one of the most annoying pasta dishes to eat. Still delicious, but it is very annoying. What's another annoying pasta dish?
I think chicken fettuccine Alfredo is also pretty bad.
Unless they don't cube it up for you.
Even when they cube it up for you, though, the chicken, like, it never really goes with the pasta. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I like chicken in any pasta dish for me.
Interesting.
I need a condiment. Ditto with the meatballs.
No. Have you ever had chicken with, like, some sort of, like, summer corn, like, agnolotti?
That's I would rather the chicken just not be there.
What?
Put some scrimps in that.
Oh, but scrimps are as cumbersome as chicken.
I don't think so. So scrimps got more flavor. They have a more defined flavor.
But
like chicken, you're just adding chewy texture to your pasta. And I want the chewy texture to be from the pasta.
What? I don't agree with you at all. This conversation
We don't have
sucks.
To agree. We don't have to like each other, Nicole. We just have to work together. No, spaghetti and meatballs. It's funny, when I had these Italian roommates in college, mm-hmm. they were so perplexed by the idea of spaghetti and meatballs. Mm-hmm. Because apparently that does not exist, like, anywhere in Italy. Uh-huh. There's, like, spaghetti is the bread. Meatballs has bread in them. Why would you put them together?
Interesting. Yeah. They don't have, like, pasta with, like, little polpette or anything?
No, the polpette are just eaten itself, and which I really love. I love spaghetti with, you know, pomodoro or marinara or whatever, and I love meatballs. I just don't ever need them on the same plate. It's how I feel about chicken and waffles.
Mm.
I would love to sit down, eat a bunch of waffles and a bunch of fried chicken. I just don't ever need them to be on the same plate.
That's okay. We'll talk about that another time.
At Jeremy Pruel X114, BLT and corn on the cob is one of the best meals ever.
How do you eat that?
I think you take the corn on the cob and you just put it inside the sandwich and
you bite
through the cob.
No.
No, I think they just mean a BLT with a side of corn on the cob.
Okay.
Give me a good side corn.
I like corn.
I love corn.
I love corn.
I think I'm one of the few people that goes to Popeyes and gets the corn on the cob.
I didn't know Popeyes had corn on the cob.
Yeah, so Popeyes got corn on the cob, and they give it to you in a little deli cup, and it's just floating in some hot water.
Oh.
And then you just pick out the wet corn, and you get to eat it. It's been cooking for hours, so it's pretty soft.
That's why you like it.
No, I think that's another thing, speaking about generations. Like, when I grew up, my dad would make dinner, we would use, like, you know, a can of corn, instant mashed potatoes, and, like, a Johnsonville sausage. So I've eaten just so much corn as a side dish in my life. I love me some good side corn. And I haven't had a good BLT in a long time, dude.
You should make yourself a BLT. There is nothing like every 6 months to just have a BLT just to remind yourself what America tastes like.
The biannual BLT.
Yeah, I have. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. I have a biannual BLT, and I make it myself. And I literally... It's like one of my favorite things to do. You saw my eyes roll in the back of my head right now.
I literally did.
I love to just take thick bacon, and I like to put it in the oven, and I bake it at 400 for 20 minutes. And then I take really, really beautiful tomatoes, and then I take mayonnaise, and then I salt and pepper the mayonnaise, and I salt and pepper the tomatoes. And then I take really, really beautiful, like, either butter lettuce or romaine lettuce. And
gotta
I just
be iceberg.
You like iceberg?
Oh, yeah. Give me the crunch.
No.
I want just wet crunch to offset the salt crunch of the bacon to the tomato juice.
Oh, no.
Butter's too waxy for me.
I don't like
Romaine's
that.
Obtrusive with the spines.
No. You always take out the center spine with a sandwich?
So you're just doing just bitter dark leaf?
It's not bitter. What are you talking about? You take out the center leaf, and then you just have the beautiful vegetal.
I want the pleasant, nutty crunch of iceberg. To me, iceberg...
There is no nutty crunch in iceberg.
I go,
it's just
either
crunch.
I take the iceberg, and I cut almost like a wedge off. If you get... if you get a fresh head of iceberg that has not been touched, I literally just saw off the top, and then I saw off a little bit of that to just create a, like a rectangle of iceberg, and then I put that on my BLT.
You're so funny.
It's got to be beefsteak tomatoes to me, too.
Yes, I like beefsteak tomatoes.
The big old fat boys.
Legs. The person's app is legs. No, I'm legs.
You're legs. I can't call you legs. That's weird.
Hey, legs.
Hey, legs. Get me a Diet Dr. Pepper.
So legs says popcorn with Tabasco and dill pickles. Yep, that's definitely a food.
Tabasco. Tabasco is a good popcorn hot sauce.
Okay, so I'm not a popcorn like crazy person. My boyfriend loves popcorn. He literally asks me to bring him popcorn to his house or to his office because he has like a bowl a day.
Mm.
And I just can't get behind it, but I'm sure this sounds delicious. I don't know why it wouldn't be delicious.
Yeah, I'm not a popcorn person either.
Yeah.
I love the idea of a ritualistic food that you eat with movies, but I have a pitch for a new ritualistic food that you eat with movies.
I know what it is. What is it? 1, 2, 3.
Ice cold grapes. Yeah, sorry. So I think, hold on, give me a sec. When you go to a movie theater, instead of having hot popcorn, they should just take out the heating element to that giant thing, and they should put in like a refrigerator box, and it should be filled with loose grapes, you know, maybe a little wet. You know, so they don't kind of stick together and get waxy. But loose, wet grapes, they dig it out with one of those. You know, if you work in like a giant ice machine, you got those ice scoops.
Yeah,
big old ice scoop. They get some wet grapes. They put it in an insulated bucket. But then you're still allowed to put hot butter on them.
Okay.
Hot buttered cold grapes.
Have you ever thought about the new reclining seats that everybody has? Imagine choking on a grape when you're like...
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, you can't
that's
do that.
That's not good. Yeah. Well, I can see how people would not want to eat the cold grapes. But I'm very glad that my girlfriend does not like popcorn and said we eat cold grapes while we watch movies. That is a real thing. I love you, baby.
I love you, my wolf. I love you, lady.
At Julia X Margaret, mayonnaise is the best condiment. I don't see any lie. I don't see any lie.
The best condiment? I don't know. I can't. This is loaded.
It's tough if you really want to break it down because to me, like, if I had to choose one condiment for the... Ooh, that's an interesting question. One condiment for the rest of your life, what do you choose?
I can't right now.
I think mine would just have to be some sort of Louisiana-style vinegary hot sauce.
I was going to say hot sauce.
Because it adds wet, it adds spice, it adds acid.
Yeah.
I think that's what I need.
I think hot sauce is the best condiment. But that's because I love spicy food.
Yeah, same here.
Mill_Messina says, eating messy snack foods with chopstick is so convenient and... keeps your fingers clean. Yes, you have seen me do this on the Mythical Kitchen story. I love eating chips with chopsticks.
No, I want to get dirty. I want my laptop to be stained the colors of whatever chips I have been eating at the time.
Yo.
If I have been eating salsa verde, I want to see little red and green flecks across my space bar. If I have been eating Flamin' Hot Cheetos, I want red smearing my screen. If I have been eating spicy sweet chili, I want the reflection of the purple bag to come off because I have mashed it into my laptop. I want to leave just a snail trail of the snack foods that I am covered in, Nicole.
Okay, snail trail, McGee. Bring the next one.
We're doing Mil-Messina again because I like this one. Organ meat, especially intestines, are amazing and should be more normalized. Yeah, do organ meat. Why not eat the whole damn animal?
I love it.
We're throwing away usable animal flesh.
People are just weird. Like, don't be so turned off by it.
Yeah, 100%. There's no reason you should be. There's no, like, actual instinctive reason that, like, a kidney should be weirder to eat than, you know, a cow's breast tissue.
Exactly.
Right? That's AKA brisket, if you're really thinking about it.
Yeah.
So I completely agree with that. Also, people who talk about, you know, climate change and all this, if you're not also down with eating the entire animal, you're part of the problem.
Exactly.
We should be focused on just whole animal butchery, reduce the amount of actual animals that are slaughtered, and we should be eating all the livers, all the intestines. Also, you really got to clean intestines properly.
Yeah.
But if you get really well-prepared, clean intestines, there's a lot of really good Korean places that make a gopchang.
Yeah, that would be a good thing to do, teaching the new generation. Teaching them how to clean intestines and how to not be scared of organ meat, I think, is something that would be really vital to those, you know, instead of just like going full vegan is really, really hard.
I think
the transition to like, you know, eating the whole animal and then from there, you know, slowly like, you know.
I don't know. Is it easier to eat an Impossible Burger or some intestines?
I think if you want to learn about the body, got to learn about the ins and outs. Shiromada 95 says sweet avocado things are superior to savory avocado things. I'm gonna butcher the way I'm saying this. I'm sorry. Sintubo is the best. I don't know what Sintubo is.
Me neither. It looks Vietnamese. Oh, Vietnamese avocado shake.
Okay, I've heard of this before. I've definitely heard of this before. I've seen it before. I do not have a lot of sweet avocado things, but one of my favorite things in the world is avocado toast with honey.
Mm-hmm.
I just put avocado whole grain bread and a squirt of honey, and I love it. So I don't see why it couldn't work. But I eat avocados every day.
I'm a big fan of avocado with condensed milk and sesame on it.
Oh, yeah.
I made just, like, randomly this kind of salad with, like, canned mandarin oranges, cubed avocado, condensed milk, and sesame seeds. And it was really freaking good.
That sounds really good.
I agree. There's no reason that avocado should, like, inherently be savory. It does have that kind of vegetal, bacterial, you know, kind of green taste to it. But also, if you've ever had, like, I mean, zucchini bread is a perfect example.
Absolutely.
Of, like, yeah, zucchini is normally used in savory things, but you can use it in sweet things. I've had a zucchini mousse that was really incredible, and it reminds me of Xin Tou Bo, the Vietnamese shake.
Do you mean avocado mousse?
Oh, no, I was saying, no, I've had, like, a zucchini mousse that the flavor of it, the sweet with that kind of, like, you know, green vegetal taste, really reminds me of a lot of these sweet avocado dishes. So I'm a huge fan. I've had avocado in a lot of Filipino halo-halos, too.
Mm.
It's good. I agree. I want to make dessert guac. All right, at Nudge Threeb, nachos are a salad.
Shut up.
Shut up, Meg. No, this is one that comes up. Nicole, this is one that comes up. We may have to do a whole episode on this. They got a point.
It's not.
They got a point. What about it like a tostada salad? You know,
that's a tostada salad.
Yeah, but
salad.
If you drop that on the ground, suddenly it's a nacho plate. That's
no,
still a salad?
No, it's not because
once you drop a tostada salad on the ground,
you ever had a fattoush?
Come on.
You're disrespecting fattoush now.
No, I made a fattoush for a buddy's wedding. I do love me some fattoush.
Yeah, so this is whack.
Mm,
I don't like
it. But
this
I think
opinion.
There's, you got to look at what lens you're looking at. Because, like, fattoush, there's a big, like, you know, salad culture, you know, in the region. That's
what,
the thing.
There's a salad culture?
Of course there's a salad culture. Like, think about, you know, the
what
even like
about?
The Hebrew or salatim.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you go to Middle East, Israel, you know, they have a whole word for just little salads that they give you. We don't got that. Like Korean banchan.
Banchan.
Yeah.
<right. you> know? Read you like a book, man. No, nachos are not a salad.
Yeah, nachos are salad.
No.
Makes me feel better at my dietary.
Josh! Okay, last one. The guitar mon. Arugula is just spicy lettuce. LOL. LOL, Jerry. LOL. That's really
Yo,
funny.
Speaking of things that millennials have ruined, putting arugula on literally everything, especially burgers.
I love arugula.
You love... No, you're part of the problem.
My favorite salad in the world is an arugula salad, warm balsamic glazed, cremini mushrooms, feta cheese, and then I just put olive oil, salt, pepper, chili flake. That's the best salad.
Oh,
ever.
God, we're all going to be so embarrassed for ourselves when we look back at what we were eating in 20 years.
I think I agree with this, and I love arugula.
Gordon Ramsay calls it rocket! On that note, thank you for listening to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich. We got new episodes for you every Wednesday.
If you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, you can hit us up on Twitter at MythicalChef or Nhandizadeh with the hashtag OpinionCasserole.
And for more Mythical Kitchen, check us out on YouTube. We launch new videos every week.
And of course, if you want to share pictures of your dishes, hit us up on Instagram at Mythical Kitchen.
See you next time.
Google mayonnaise banana candle.
Google mayonnaise girl. It's just a picture of Nicole.